Hello, everybody. Here we go. A brand new week, a brand new month. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, off and running on Monday, July 1st, 2024. Happy Canada Day to all of our northern neighbors. Through the years, many trips north of the border, always had a great time up in Canada. Today marks the midway point of our 14th year on the radio. We're coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. We have five radio stations now under one roof here, part of the Bustos Media. Their growing presence of Bustos Media here in Tucson. Worldwide live listening of our program on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. And for our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls. Terrific photographer Moe is. Picture framing, hanging services. He'll come out, make sure everything goes up on the wall the way you want it, if you so desire. Nice extra service there at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and at moesgallery.com. Our Monday one-on-one guest this week, Dr. Len Jessup, two-time university president, two-time business school dean, longtime business school professor in technology and entrepreneurship, as well as being a startup investor and advisor. He was most recently the president of Claremont Graduate University in Southern California. He also served as president at one of my alma maters, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, as well as dean of the business schools at the University of Arizona and Washington State. His new book, Doing Very Well, it is a bestseller. He teamed up with Forbes magazine on a book on selfless leadership. It's now out, and as I say, already an Amazon bestseller. He is the first in his family to graduate from college, earning his PhD in business from the University of Arizona. And Dr. Jessup joins us now on the live line from Las Vegas. Len, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing great. It's great to be reacquainted with you.
Yes, it is. It's been a while, but always a pleasure. Yeah. The book is titled Selfless, Lessons Learned from a Life Devoted to Servant Leadership in 5 Acts. A couple of words jump out at me in that title. Servant leadership, Len, what is that all about?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot written about servant leadership, and my take on it was that by, you know, taking on a selfless approach, by thinking about others more than yourself, and in fact, acting in the best interest of others, whether they're people on your team or they're the clients or customers or students, you know, that you serve, you can actually get a lot more done in the long run. I like the old adage, go slow to go fast. Just take your time, listen to people, take their ideas and opinions into account, co-create solutions for how to go about doing things. You're going to get a lot of buy-in, and ultimately you're going to get a lot more done. You're going to get there a lot quicker.
Is this a book that you had thought about for years, Len?
It was, Bill, you know, one of those things that probably when I graduated from University of Arizona 35 years ago, I started thinking about it, jotting down notes along the way over decades. And then finally, a couple summers ago, and then I, you know, worked on it in earnest and created a draft. And then I sat on it for a year because I just didn't think anyone would want to read it. I gave it to friends and family and just sat there, not sure what to do with it. And then last summer, just about a year ago, Forbes reached out, and then, you know, then we were off and running.
There's obviously an interest in this, an interest in leadership, because the book is doing so well. What are some traits, Dr. Len Jessup, that you point to that are particularly important in becoming an effective leader?
You know, what I've seen now, having worked with many, many great leaders over the decades, the the really successful leaders evolve to a point where the ego comes out of it. There's really no ego left. It's almost as though they've got nothing left to prove. And so they're doing it for all the right reasons. And so I can think of countless incredible leaders I've worked with who are so humble and so kind and so respectful that if you just met them walking down the street and had a kind of a quick casual conversation, you wouldn't think how could this person be leading a Fortune 100 company, right? They don't fit that traditional notion we have of that charismatic leader, you know, very much in charge. I've found that many of these leaders have almost in a Zen-like way evolved to a point where there's no ego about it anymore. They're just trying to help people.
You know, you've had to work with a lot of very important people to get things done. And I'm thinking about when you were leading at UNLV and talking about an NFL-ready domed stadium that has now come to pass. What were some of the inside information that you could share with our listeners about how that actually came about, Len Jessup?
Yeah, you know, Bill, that was one of probably the most difficult things I've ever been involved in. And, you know, I've done some pretty difficult things over the years. For example, we launched a medical school and got it fully funded and accredited while I was there. But that was easy compared to getting the stadium project underway and getting it done. When I got there, the university was working with the leaders along the strip to work on a collegiate stadium for UNLV. And for a variety of reasons, the business model didn't work. It just, you know, things didn't fall into place. And so it was stuck. And when I got there, there was a small group that said, boy, you know, if we rethought this as an NFL stadium, then it might work because it might, you know, the economics might work a bit better on it. And maybe it'd be more interesting to the folks on the strip. And so I give credit to, I think it was Napoleon McCallum, former NFL running back who worked on the strip, I think for the Sands at the time, if I'm not mistaken. And he said, you know, the folks up in Oakland have expressed interest in Las Vegas. And so I think he was the one and people around him that reached out to Mark Davis with the Raiders. We invited Mark Davis to come down and visit Las Vegas and visit UNLV. And we had 42 acres that we had set aside and look at that property and other properties. And that's what kind of got the ball rolling. The governor put together a task force. I got to co-chair that along with Steve Hill, who now runs the stadium authority and also the convention center there in Las Vegas. And anyway, long story short, we were able to get it done. I played a very small role. I can't take much more credit other than just being active and being a part of the team. But it was difficult because initially the 31 other owners didn't want to come to Las Vegas. They were afraid about the gambling and things that go on in Las Vegas. But we were able to, in our local gaming innovation center, we did a study for them showing that, in fact, you know, gambling is the most heavily regulated in Las Vegas, far more closely regulated than anywhere else in the world. So we got them past it. Then we figured out, you know, a deal that made sense for everybody in Las Vegas economically. And next thing you know, UNLV's got a state-of-the-art stadium to play in that they really didn't have to pay for.
You know, I flash back to my days working for NBC Radio in Las Vegas in the 1970s. And in those days, there was the big threat was Atlantic City. It was basically the only two games in town, Nevada and Atlantic City. And that was always the big worry that, oh, we'll never have professional sports in Las Vegas because of gambling. But you talk about, you know, it is the most, probably one of the most regulated industries in the world. And now look at how gambling on sports has just mushroomed in this country, Len.
No, absolutely. I mean, that was, you know, among the most salient points that we were able to make to the NFL owners was that, you know, they were so actively involved with FanDuel and these other organizations, you know, as huge advertisers, that they were already kind of partnering with that side of the industry anyway. And then they were also going over to England to play every year. And, you know, it's, you know, virtually unregulated, certainly more open than it is in the United States. And people could, you know, gamble there on the game that they were watching in real time. So we were able to let them see that they were a lot closer to that side of the industry than they realized. And that, in fact, like I said, in Las Vegas, it's so heavily regulated that there, you know, little chance of anything going awry there. And ultimately they got over it. But you know what really pushed it over the edge was, I think, Bill Foley bringing the hockey team into town so successfully. And I think that made the NFL owners really stand up and pay attention to Las Vegas.
We're speaking with Dr. Len Jessop. He is our one-on-one, Monday one-on-one guest. And Dr. Jessop has been, he's had a great career and still going very strong. President at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV, and most recently over at Claremont Graduate University. And his new book, which is doing so well, is titled Selfless, Lessons Learned from a Life Devoted to Servant Leadership in 5 Acts. When we continue with Dr. Jessop after our break, we'll talk about these 5 acts, why empathy is a foundation of good leadership, and more as we continue on the Buckmaster Radio Program. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau, serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this first day of July as we begin the second half of the year already. Hard to believe. It's the Monday One-on-One presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. They are conveniently located midtown at Fort Lowell and Dodge right next to Copenhagen. And their website's looking great as well, moesgallery.com. The One-on-One guest, Dr. Len Jessup, he's had an incredible career, still going strong. Two-time university president, two-time business school dean, longtime business school professor in tech and entrepreneurship, as well as being a startup investor and advisor. And we're talking to him about his new book, which is published by Forbes, and doing very well. It's already, in fact, became an Amazon bestseller pretty much the moment it hit Amazon. The book is titled Selfless, Lessons Learned from a Life Devoted to Servant Leadership in Five Acts. Len, I want to talk a little bit about, you write that one night following a painful divorce, you hit what you call the lowest moment in your life. How did that change your life and your how things started then to turn around for you, Len?
Yeah, you know, thanks for pointing that one out. I often use that now when I'm working with executive groups or doing executive education. I've turned it into an exercise in where I have people think about a moment when they were at their best, they were living their best self, either personally or professionally. And then we use that to try to help leaders to understand kind of, you know, what their why is, what the motivation for their leadership and their leadership approach. And that night definitely shaped my leadership approach. As you say, it was after a very difficult divorce. I was a busy business school dean, then moving into a vice president spot at Washington State University. Two kids were young at the time, 4 and 8 years old. And overnight, I found myself in a situation where I was needing to find a way to be that busy executive while also having my kids with me and being dad for half the week, you know, full time for half the week. And that was the night that I got them tucked into bed. And then I had a home on Moscow Mountain, kind of looking down over into the valley on the University of Idaho side of the border. We affectionately refer to that as the Mountain House. And that night I put them to bed and I poured a little glass of Cabernet. And the story I tell in the book is that I started crying. I was overcome with emotion, crying into my salty Cabernet because of, you know, I had to make a shift that night from being selfish to being selfless. It's not that I was a bad person, but everything in our lives, my wife and my family was all, it all revolved around me. And it was a pretty selfish role that I played in, you know, in the family. And so overnight, I had to get selfless, really, you know, become more selfless really quickly because I had kids to take care of. So I had the grief working from the divorce. I had the fear looking forward to how the heck am I going to make this work and be an executive and be dad, you know, at the same time without any help. And then kind of square in the middle of that, a loneliness, just a deep loneliness that evening that kind of, that drove those emotions. It was a pivotal moment for me because, you know, I figured it out. I just picked myself up by my bootstraps and I figured out how to do it one step in front of the other. And I eventually got there. But boy, it was that night taught me a lot about myself.
You know, empathy is the ability, Len, to understand and share the feelings of another. And you have increasingly, you're saying that this has become a really key component, a pivotal point in leadership, a leadership trait.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll give you, as I mentioned, I think it's part of as you evolve as a leader, I think you start to realize that you rely, and I go all the way back to the writings of Peter Drucker and Tom Peters and others, and it's about people. People matter, whether they're your employees or they're your customers or clients. And as you evolve as a leader, you realize that, and you realize you've got to then develop skills like empathy and real listening and taking into account what people are telling you. You're not the smartest person. And I'll give you an example. When I was at University of Arizona, a quick example, I got there, we did the listening tour, my first 100 days, I'm just, an alum returning as the dean of the business school. And in that 100-day listening tour, we realized that we needed to launch an online MBA. We had a very good on ground MBA. In fact, we were doing it in Tucson and offering one up in Scottsdale at the time. But we needed an online MBA in the portfolio. It was just beginning, and other really good business schools were starting to offer them. We weren't. And we needed to do it because that's the whole market. The industry was moving in that direction, and we needed that enrollment. And we needed the revenue, quite frankly. I had a group of faculty who were really excited about doing that, designing it, building it, teaching in it. But I had another group of senior faculty who were not. And the arguments they were giving, kind of philosophical and intellectual, that it wasn't the right modality and it didn't fit the pedagogy. But, you know, it didn't ring true. And when you looked at the other business schools around the country that were doing it so successfully already, and what we had to do was kind of get outside of the university environment, off campus, and sit down in an earnest conversation with that group of faculty to get to the real underlying truth. And the truth was that they just, you know, at that stage in their career, it just wasn't, it was a lot of work for them to make that shift to online learning. And my vice dean at the time, Jeff Schatzberg, and I came to the realization that they were right. These were legitimate arguments. It was going to be really difficult for them to make that shift. So we not only listened, but we empathized with them. We got it. We agreed. And in fact, they were really good at on-ground teaching. And so we kind of reached a detente where the one group of faculty launched the online MBA, the other group of faculty, we let them continue teaching in other programs. They were really good at what they were doing, and we needed them to continue doing that. And thank goodness we reached that detente. That program now has hundreds in enrollment and much needed tuition revenue for the Eller College there. A little bit of empathy went a long way in that instance.
You know, I think about my own career over 50 years in a very difficult competitive business in the media, and I've had some very empathetic leaders, and they have been my choice to work for those people. And I've also had some leaders, Len Jessup, who want to play the role of the bad guy leadership. I don't like it. I didn't like it. And this continues to be a trait, as you well know, in the business world.
Unfortunately, it is. I mean, there are still some holdouts with that very old school approach to leadership. And, you know, when I encounter someone like that, what I try to help them to understand is, I say, think about it this way. Here's an interesting lesson from the book. If you think about each of us in our daily lives in a 24-hour cycle, right, we spend a pretty good chunk of that time sleeping at night. So then now you're down to the waking hours in the day. And most of us normal people work for a living. And so a typical day of those limited waking hours, most of them are spent at work, or at least working or thinking about work. And, you know, if you extrapolate that over a life, most of us begin working at an early age. We work, probably many of us, we work too late. And then unfortunately, then later in our life, we pass shortly after. So proportionately, we spend this huge, you know, chunk of our life working. And in a 24-hour day, most of the waking hours are typically spent working or thinking about work. So what I try to help the leader to realize is, think about now those people that you're responsible for spending a disproportionate and inordinate amount or proportion of their time with you at work. Don't you think then that your primary responsibility, you could argue, is to make sure that time, that inordinate amount of time that they're spending is well spent.
Yes.
That they're spending it doing meaningful work, not meaningful to the organization, but meaningful to them personally, deeply personally meaningful and engaged. And just at a bare minimum that occasionally they laugh at work and they find joy in the time that they're spending with you. Shouldn't that be the primary responsibility of a leader? Sometimes that gets through and, you know, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, boy, I'd rather work with the empathetic leader than not, I'll tell you that.
I'll tell you. It sounds like that is a leader who is a good boss in my book, Len Jessup. You know, in the title, you say lessons learned from a life devoted to servant leadership in five acts. What are the five acts?
Yeah, I was trying to be cute, and so I structured it. You know, in the old structure of a Shakespearean play, a good sort of Elizabethan play. And so there's a nice arc to the story. I was trying to write it in the style of Mitch Albom, you know, Tuesdays with Morrie. He had that great narrative storytelling ability, and that's what I was trying to do here, so that like a good Mitch Albom tale, you could maybe, you know, take this with you on an airplane ride and be done with it in an hour and a half. You'd read it cover to cover. So that's how I arrived at the structure of the five acts. In my case, the acts were origins, beliefs, adversity, impact, and legacy. So you can sort of see the arc of a life there, you know, in the acts in the book. And that's how I got to that structure.
Len, we've got about 30 seconds. What would you like the listener to take away from the book Selfless?
Surround yourself by people smarter than you. Don't believe your press clippings. Don't take life too seriously. Take time for reflection. And humble, kind, listen to people. You can do that. You'll be effective as a leader.
Sounds good. Len Jessop, great catching up with you. Good luck and continued success with the book Selfless, which is available at Amazon and all the better retailers, book retailers around the country. Len, thank you very much, sir.
Bill, thank you so much. It's great to hear your voice again.
Thank you. Len Jessop talking about his best-selling book, Selfless. Len is our Monday one-on-one guest, Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right by Copenhagen, and, of course, on the web at moesgallery.com. Coming up next, Keith Rosenblum with the Border Report, our monthly border report right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, off and running on July 1st. Happy Canada Day to our northern neighbors. And there are a lot of Canadians who winter out here and enjoy our weather. They're enjoying the weather and the rain over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rideau River. Things looking very green at Green Things, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, zocalovillage.com. They are open daily. They're in their 53rd year of business, locally owned. Jan and Jack do a fabulous job over there. When we do our telephone interviews, and we're doing a couple today, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, once a month here and sometimes more, depending on the news cycles. Our border report is hosted by longtime border observer Keith Rosenblum. Rosenblum, whose resume includes border reporting for both the Arizona Daily Star and the Arizona Republic. Former congressional aide to the late United States Representative Jim Colby. Keith worked with Jim for almost a quarter of a century here in southern Arizona. Keith is a fellow at the University of California, San Diego Center for U.S.-Mexican Studies. Keith, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm still in the groggy stage after the election of President Sheinbaum and the fact that she actually comes in as the duly selected candidate of President López Obrador. So we have six more years of basically President López Obrador, but in a less likely vessel, which is to say a Jewish woman with her PhD. But this is a continuity. The Mexicans decided that everything that López Obrador had proposed was spot on, and here's the torchbearer. And I'm continuing to be bleak on Mexico and on what the Mexicans have decided, in part not because of her. I think she's probably the best candidate, but more because the entire country is now Morena. It's the Morena party, and when you have a party that has it, they can switch the language of Mexico tomorrow to Norwegian and with no difficulty. They gave the Cámara de Diputados, that's the House of Representatives, they gave the Senate and obviously the executive branch all to Morena Party, which is what President Andrés Manuel López Obrador had founded. So to me, anytime you do that, I guess there's possibilities that a strong president could resist the temptation to simply bend the law her way. But to me, it has all sorts of ominous portents.
And before he says goodbye as the leader of Mexico, he's been talking about shaking up the judicial system. And is this causing a lot of waves there? Or are people just saying, oh, okay?
In the U.S., we elect judges, and we also have them appointed. Supreme Court are appointed. Federal judges are appointed and then have to be approved. Appellate court, same thing. Let me think at state level. State Supreme Court, I think, isn't that nominated by the governor? I'm not sure. I don't know whether we run. I don't think you run for a Supreme Court position, do you, in Arizona anyway? So we have a kind of a hybrid system where there are judges who are elected. And I'm dubious about the Mexican example because the reason that López Obrador has had an ongoing spat with the judiciary, which was really the one institution that stood up to him. What he really wants is vengeance, and he wants for the judiciary to be under the thumb also of the party. So what I see on the verge of happening is judges from Morena, from the party, running and the citizens electing them. So I see that as being one more element to this fabulous, I use the word fabulous not in a positive way, more in a numerical way or just an adjective, majority that Morena has garnered. I don't believe in the wisdom of crowds, Bill. I don't believe it in any universe. And I believe it less in the case of Mexico. I believe that the reason that López Obrador won is because he's given everybody a tarjeta de pensión or de bienestar. It's a debit card that carries 3,000 pesos a month, like $170 maybe right now. That's been done at the cost of public works projects. It's been very hard to maintain. And the judiciary, which I think was a bastion of independence. I can't say it was good or it was bad. I don't feel like I'm qualified to. But I do believe that it stood up to him, and I do believe this is about having the judiciary fold the same way that it would happen in Russia, the same way it would happen in Iran or in Venezuela. So I'm not keen on it. I think it's a bad thing, period. And yes, I think that is what caused for the peso to be devalued. The Mexicans got a shot of reality, because if you, Bill, decide to go start a business in Sonora, and you wind up in a dispute with someone over the business for whatever reason, or a commercial dispute, the last thing you want, you know, the United States lives through this, the last thing you want are homeboy judges. You know what it was like to be black in the South and get a traffic ticket or get pulled over for anything, and you were at the mercy of whoever the JP was or the local judge or even right on up to the state judge. Look at the Alabama Supreme Court decision on, you know, IVF being a baby, an unborn baby. Judiciaries can do weird things. And I think that the status quo in Mexico right now is a good one, but the president is taking it on, and that will change too. I'm gloomy when it comes to this aspect of Mexico, whether the country can roar ahead in other areas or move ahead in other areas. Yeah, but who wants to do it when it's a single party? I think that most societies eventually fall apart with that.
By the way, Keith, the state's highest court here in Arizona is the Supreme Court. It's composed of 7 justices who are appointed by the governor. And this particular election cycle in 2024, 2 will be up for voters to say whether or not they will be retained. It's a 6-year term, and a justice can be in office for 2 6-year terms.
Okay, well, it's very seldom. I mean, then if I'm like everybody else in Arizona, I try to remember if I've heard the judge's name, and if that judge was controversial anyway, I'll try to learn a little bit about him or her, and then vote not to retain. But my guess is that the retention is probably 99%. I don't recall. Do you recall?
I don't know what it would be, but 99% sounds pretty darn accurate.
Care about, and I certainly would not want to have people campaigning for the judiciary. That would freak me out, and I don't think I'm qualified. The reason I want the governor to make that call, and in the case of the U.S. government, the reason I want the president or others to nominate and then for them to be approved by the Senate is because that's their job. If we had judges, if Mexicans have judges running for office, I think it would be a nightmare.
Let me ask you, I hear some dishes. Are you at a restaurant?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm in Tucson for once.
Whoa.
So I had to flee the wind on the south side, so I sought refuge in a fast food restaurant. Those are the dishes. I do not wash dishes myself. That you probably know about me from many interviews.
Sounded like somebody dropped some of the dirty dishes.
Your choices are the dishes or 20 or 35 mile an hour winds at Valencia and Country Club.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Keith, stick around. We'll do segment two of our border report with Keith Rosenblum after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's Metropolitan Planning Organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. Part two now of the monthly border report with Keith Rosenblum on the Buckmaster Show. Keith has taken refuge in a local fast food restaurant away from some heavy weather and high winds that seem to be moving in through the south side of Tucson. Keith, the three-year low, that's what we're hearing, a drop in illegal crossings at a three-year low. Any comment from Keith Rosenblum?
I'm puzzled by these patterns, and there's a combination. It's not that word gets out all of a sudden and people stop doing. There's these different variables. I'm sorry about the background noise, but the you have the time. It's the dead of summer. You have word does get out. There are newscasts, and the State Department has an ongoing campaign where it tells people, you know, don't come. It's going to be tougher for you. I don't know. I have a funny story. You want to hear a great story about the Border Patrol and Keith Rosenblum being pulled over? It's a It'll be a fun listen.
So okay.
May I?
Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
So I go with my 10-year-old, but this will actually, it's a compliment to Border Patrol for the following. I go to Nogales and I took my 10-year-old. And we come back in the U.S. and I'd forgotten Damien's passport, all his papers. You don't need a, go by ground, you don't need a passport. You don't really even need proof of any identification. It's a myth that you have to have a passport or papers to come back in the U.S., especially when you are on ground. So I just established, okay, you know, they ask, the agent asks, is your dad? Yes, he is. So we come into the U.S. and I parked in Nogales, Arizona, and I went to get the vehicle that I had, and my son reminds me that I parked right up against a cactus. So he says, do you mind pulling the car? Can I pull the car out? I said, hey, go ahead and wait for me across the street, and I'll go ahead and pick you up. So I get in the car. It's a rental car I had that day. It was a Jeep from Avis, and I make a U-turn, and he gets into the car. Okay, so hold the thought. I'm on I-19 approaching exit 4, now headed back to Tucson, and a Border Patrol marked vehicle comes right up next to me, looks in the car, looks at us, and he holds parallel to me for probably a mile. It's a long time, it's a full minute. Then he drops behind me, and I'm telling my son, we're about to be pulled over by the U.S. Border Patrol. I have no reason, no explanation for why. So I'm thinking, okay. So then the agent puts on not only his overhead lights, but he also puts on his siren.
What?
Which I thought was weird. Yeah, so I go ahead, and I gesture through the glass, because it's visible, it's not a darkened glass. I gesture to the agent, and I'm not stopping on the highway. I'm pointing ahead and just, you know, to another exit, because everybody gets the number of officer fatalities and human fatalities on shoulders is much higher. That's the worst place you can ever make a traffic stop.
Yeah.
So I go ahead and I gesture, but I'm going to go ahead and get off. I think it's whatever exit 13 is. And the next thing I know, there's actually another marked car in front of me. So now it's like there's a boxing in process going on. And I'm telling my son, oh, we have two agents that are pulling us over. And I guess I'll just go ahead and pull over on the highway anyhow. So I do. Oh, and then there's another vehicle in front of him. So it's a three-car little parade of Border Patrol agents. The car that's in the, there's two in front of me. One's marked, one's unmarked. And the agent from behind comes out and comes on the passenger side of the car. And the civilian clothed guy from in front also comes over, two of them. And so we go ahead and we open the door. Now, the even freakier part is that I have a rental car. It's a Jeep. And I don't know how to lower the window on this rental car. I'm trying to figure out where it doesn't have a, you don't lower it. There's not the knob, but the switch.
Yeah,
is not on the doors, and it turns out, I couldn't find it though at that moment. I just couldn't find it. So I'm putting my hands on the wheel on the steering wheel to make sure they know that I'm not reaching down for a firearm or anything. They open the door, and the guy looks at my son. He looks at me, and now the part about the cactus should kick in. He says to my son, "Are you okay?" My son looks at him and he says, "Who is the guy who's driving?" And so Damien says, oh, that's my dad. Well, what had happened was they, under surveillance at that place in Nogales, they'd seen a kid get into a car, that you make a U-turn, and for a kid to get into the vehicle and take off. And they concluded, you know, logically, that Keith Rosenblum was in the child trafficking business.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, I thanked them. We both thanked them. So that's a perfectly logical conclusion. No, I'm not trafficking in children right now, at least under these circumstances. So thank you very much. And off went the plain clothes guy, and off went the uniform guy. But actually, it's a good, I mean, it's actually a sign of just how keen they are. It's an unusual kind of slice of life story.
Very interesting. Quickly, Keith, in my stack of stuff for you, USA Today had an investigation about the cartels, how heavily armed they have now become, and talking about they're using now and have javelin, handheld stinger-type missiles and things. Are they trying to send a message? There was some speculation in the article, send a message to the new president. Look, we've got more firepower than the Mexican military.
I don't know about sending a message. It should just be understood.
Yeah.
And this should be a shame point for every American that we Americans, people who own stock in companies or whether they're privately held or whatever, we are providing all those armaments to all the cartels. We're also providing the arms to the Mexican military. I think 70% of their arms are sourced in the U.S. So we win on both sides. We get to sell to the cartels and then decry Mexican violence, and we sell to the military and give them things as we did under the what we call the Merida Pact. So if there was ever a either deceitful or hypocritical, you know, call out, it would be U.S. policy, and we could control those. We could. There's obviously the border is still a sieve, and there's still ways of you know, getting things through no matter what. But we willfully and eagerly sell weapons to Mexican cartels. It doesn't say on the receipt, you know, Nueva Generación Jalisco. Sinaloa cartel or Tijuana cartel. Although maybe for tax purposes they do. Maybe they're actually part of the cost of doing business. But yes, I mean, this is one of the parts, again, that has me melancholic about the election. I think there's no resolve whatsoever on the Mexicans' part to fight a drug war or to even deal with it at all. It's just going to exist as a parallel universe. And so I don't know if there were messages intended for the incoming president. I do know that the cartel strength and its grip into so many different facets of the economy is a powerful one, and that it bodes really bad for the country. Now, that doesn't mean that you on a trip to Cancun or La Paz or, you know, Hermosillo are going to be affected by it. It just means that that is going to be the reality. And the more that you let it penetrate the economy, the more it's going to be either difficult to correct, or it's just going to, or it's incorrigible, period. I don't know which, but the Mexicans are not interested in facing it. The brazos no balazos policy, you know, the HUD's not no bullets policy, which is what López Obrador introduced, seems now to have been almost adopted by the entire country.
When is the swearing-in ceremony? When will the transition of power happen?
October 1st. I'm hoping to score an invitation. I know I should mention in this broadcast, I now know two elected, popularly elected people in the in the different legislatures. First of all, the guy, I don't know if we ever got him on your show, Bill, but Jesus Puyol, P-U-J-O-L, was elected as he was a former mayor of Nogales, and Jesus was elected from Morena Party to be a deputy, a federal deputy from Nogales, Magdalena Santana. That's their region. I think he's District 3. I think he'd make a fabulous interview.
Keith, we had him on the program at one point.
Did we have it or did we talk about it? I don't know. I know we talked about it.
No, I think we actually had him
to talk to about the upcoming legislature. He's splitting his time now between Nogales, Hermosillo, and Mexico City as he prepares for the next legislature. But he'd be a really interesting person to talk to about where legislatively the country will be going. And the second person I know is the former governor of Sonora, Manlio Fabio Beltrones, who won both popular election, a Senate seat from Sonora. And he did that against, again, this tidal wave of Morena support. So that in and of itself is a small miracle, because it was one sweep of the Morena Party, and any of these minorities who are in are going to be lone wolves howling at the moon.
All right, Keith, we are out of time. Always a pleasure. Thank you. Hope you have a great rest of the day, Keith.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
Keith Rosenblum with us for the monthly Border Report. Always a lot of good information from Keith. That will wrap up the first day of July show here on KVOI, Tucson's Voice, the Buckmaster Show, back with you tomorrow. Among our guests tomorrow, we'll have Monica Dangler, who heads the Pima Animal Care Center. Oh, my goodness. Those of us who love animals, well, well, 4th of July, do I need to say any more with the fireworks? And it's a problem. Anyway, hope everybody has a great day. Back with you tomorrow.